We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. It's Tisha B'Av. We don't say welcome to each other. We are commemorating the destruction of the 2 days of the two temples and their destruction. And we have a Tisha B'Av show for you. In this half hour of the show, we will be featuring a rebroadcast of Louis Borden, The Journey That Saved Curious George, Saving Somebody from the Holocaust, is Tisha B'Av related. In the second half of the show, we'll be talking about the holiday, the commemoration of Tisha B'Av. And maybe we can squeeze in a little bit about the portion of the Eschanan, which is chapter 6, verse 1 of the book of Deuteronomy. We have a Tisha B'Av story all the way at the end. We have some Tisha B'Av music sprinkled in between. In the second half of the show, we'll be featuring Michael Druck, Jewish Hour's own poet laureate. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. The Knesset passed a law making Israel the nation state of the Jewish people. The bill makes Hebrew the official language, the Jewish star the state symbol to be on the flag and money, the Hebrew calendar as the official calendar, recognizing Jewish holidays and days of remembrance, the national anthem and naming Jerusalem as the capital. Arabic was given special status but was not made an official language. More than 100 rockets were fired from Gaza into Israel this week. The only damage was to a chicken coop. The rest landed in open fields. A firebomb landed in a kindergarten while the children were in school. Miraculously, no one was hurt. Listen to this one. They're getting creative. A falcon, that's a bird. A falcon, not some kind of code name for something. That's a bird. A falcon from Gaza was found in southern Israel with a bomb attached to its legs. In response to all of this, the IDF destroyed a Hamas training center in Gaza City. One Palestinian was killed. The U.S. House of Representatives passed the Elie Wiesel Bill 405-5. The bill requires the executive branch, that means the president, to report annually to Congress to identify early warnings of genocide, training U.S. officials in identifying potential areas where genocide may occur, and commit the U.S. to support criminal accountability for past genocides. U.S. federal, this one has me a little scratching my head a little bit. U.S. federal magistrate Mark Hornsby ruled that Jews are protected by the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Where were judges in 1964? But it's the first time it's ever happened. The opinion concerned a case in which a man sued a private Christian college for not hiring him as a football coach because of his Jewish background. The plaintiff, Joshua Bonadonna, is an alumnus of Louisiana College who grew up Jewish but converted to Christianity during his studies there. And finally, we've heard claims that the Mossad trained sharks off the coast of Egypt, spy vultures sent to Saudi Arabia. Now Jordan claims that Israel orchestrated the recent earthquakes in the Galilee as a test for destroying mosques and churches in Israel. Yep. Contrapositively to that statement, however, Jerusalem Chief Rabbi Shlomo Amar says recent earthquakes show Jewish people need to wake up and return to God, which is always a good thing. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line, Louise Borden has written a book, which to me was eyebrow-raising, as probably, I guess, 90% of the youth of America know about Curious George. This book is called The Journey That Saved Curious George, The True Wartime Escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray, the authors of Curious George. How are you today, Louise?
I'm just great. We're a little warmer in Cincinnati than Detroit, I think.
Oh, yes. Indeed. Like someone said to me this last week, we've had a very mild winter this spring. Yes. So. Okay.
Great.
So now, Curious George was the second book that I read. When back in 4 years old, I remember getting a library card. That was a rite of passage in Newark. Everybody, when I was 4 years old, I went to the library with my mom, and you had to be able to print your name on a piece of paper so that they could validate that it was you. And the first book that I read was Harold and the Purple Crayon. The second book I read was The Adventures of Curious George. So this is something I've read every single Curious George book, and my kids have read every single Curious George book. And now my grandchildren are reading every single Curious George book. So what I'm curious about is, how did you get involved with the backstory behind it? Because up until I saw this book, it never occurred to me that the Rays were even Jewish.
Exactly. Well, I was typing away in Cincinnati on working on other children's books, specifically several about World War II, and I saw a blurb in Publishers Weekly, which is a trade magazine for people in publishing, and there was just three sentences that stated that Margaret and Hans had fled from Paris on bicycles in June of 1940 on a rainy morning, carrying among their manuscripts what would become Curious George. It did not state that they were German or that they were Jewish, but I was just fascinated as a fellow, you know, book creator, that they had been in this great escape with millions of other people on the roads of France, because I had studied that time period in college. So I asked around in publishing if there was a book about this. I have a great interest in the war and in the ordinary stories that have come from the war, and no one knew any of the details. And to kind of summarize, I started on a journey of research. Neither of the Rays were living. They didn't have children. And they had sent all of their archival belongings. The estate had sent them down to a special library at the University of Southern Mississippi, which houses all of the paintings, drawings, manuscripts of 1,200 children's book creators, artists, and writers.
Okay, maybe you're answering my question. So, as it seems kind of obscure, the University of Southern Mississippi would have the collective archives of H.A. Ray, but you said that's just kind of like, is that like an old children's book manuscript graveyard? Kind of like the elephant graveyard?
It is. Well, it's really a very vibrant collection that's grown over the years. The original curator, whose name was de Grumman, began this collection, and she contacted H.A. and was given a piece of art and stayed in touch, so that at the Ray's death, the estate sent the manuscripts down. But Ezra Jack Keats, also Jewish, very famous. He wrote and illustrated The Snowy Day. Just Newbery winners, many, many people have sent their archives down there, and they have a large children's literature conference every year, and acclaimed writers and authors go and speak there. So it's really kind of a national jewel down here.
A children's book historian's heaven. Okay, so take us through the process. So you've got this like earworm going on in your head saying, I gotta do this. So did you like pick yourself up and go down to what city in southern Mississippi someplace?
Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Yeah, it doesn't
which
get
means flying to Atlanta, changing planes, flying to Gulfport, renting a car, and driving 60 miles to Hattiesburg. On my own curiosity and money, my own time and money. This was in the late 90s, actually, because this book was a long project. After that, I would go to Paris a couple of times and rent cars in France and try and find some of the places that the Rays, where they had lived or stayed during the years 1936 to 1940. Before the Germans came into to Paris. So it was a remarkable research journey for me and somewhat of an adventure, but I was kind of a pathfinder. No one had written about this, and I had to piece together through the letters in the archives, through photographs, through editorial letters, what projects they were working on, when. And I made big tracking calendars in my house with, you know, each day, where were they? Were they in Avranches? Were they in Paris? Were they traveling? Were they, you know, at home working on their art projects? Who were they? They were Jewish. I didn't know that. Both families had grown up in Hamburg. And Hans served in the German army in World War I. Who knew, you know? And then he went to Brazil in the 1920s because of the inflation in Germany. And then Margaret, from a family that knew Hans, Margaret was younger, a little younger than Hans. She left Germany with others in her family because of the temper of the times in the mid-30s in Hamburg and with the Nazi...
rise to power.
With the Nazi laws, et cetera. So and Margaret's parents went to London. Her father had served in the German parliament at one time. So these were people who were book people. They loved art. And so Margaret ends up in Brazil, where Hans is already living and working. And they get married. And then they go to Paris for a honeymoon. And instead of staying for 2 weeks, they end up staying for 4 years. Probably would have stayed had war not broken out.
I can say that's some honeymoon.
Excuse me?
That's some honeymoon.
Yes.
4 years. Yeah, yes. I've say that my wife and I were married 35 years. It's like it's a long honeymoon for us.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, they were lucky. They had Brazilian passports and they were able to get the proper travel documents in those terribly hectic days of June when thousands of people were trying to cross the border and get out of France before the closing net of occupation came down.
So they bicycled from, let me interrupt you. They bicycled from Paris to Spain. You have like the Pyrenees Mountains in between. That's
yeah.
Pretty hefty.
Exactly. So when I learned that they had bicycled out of Paris and then taken a train to Lisbon.
Okay.
I thought, well, how long did they bicycle? You know, Hans was 42 years old. These people weren't Lance Armstrongs. How were they going to do this? So, and I looked at a map and I wondered what roads they traveled. And in the archives, in an envelope, were Hans's tiny, the size of Post-its, work calendars, a diary calendar. And each day he noted what he did and where he worked. And so I realized if I could, and I blew these up on the Xerox machine to enlarge them, if I could signed his own words, and they're in the calendar. June 12, 1940, left Paris by bicycle at 5 a.m. And they did not bicycle all the way to the Spanish border. They bicycled to Orléans, and then they took their bicycles and got on a train with their bicycles and went down to Bayonne and Biarritz, and then they sold their bicycles at the French-Spanish border, got on another train, and took it to Lisbon. So they traveled for about 2 weeks, and it took them, it was about 4 months from when they left Paris until they got to New York Harbor, coming in by the Statue of Liberty on October 14, 1940.
What kind of visa did they have to get into the country? Because they were both carrying Brazilian passports. Immigration
right.
laws were very
tight. I don't
know
the visas. I don't know that those documents no longer, well, they're not in the archive and no one has come up with them. But Hans cited in his calendar that they would spend hours at the various consulates in various towns, the Portuguese, the Spanish consulate, the American consulate. Margaret had a sister who was living right outside of New York City on Long Island. And so their hope was to go from Lisbon through Rio, where Hans's sister was living with her husband, and then up to New York.
Would they have problems since they were currently interrupted again? Since they were carrying Brazilian passports, they wouldn't have needed any type of a document to go to Brazil. They should have been able to just get on a boat and go to Brazil.
No. But leaving France, I think there were certain, you know, you had to have your travel documents stamped. They had some identity cards that they held before the war that showed where they were. You know, it's like a, I guess they were required back then, if you were going to leave Paris and go visit Avranches, you know, and it was stamped by the prefecture or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But travel was tough with all of these ships, you know, that were loaded with people trying to leave and trying to get get permission. As a matter of fact, they were in Rio and they were waiting to come to the United States, and they waited weeks, and they went to see they were at the consulate, and the consul said, oh, well, I would have granted these sooner. And Margaret said, well, why didn't you? And Hans kind of kicked her under the table with his foot. I was later told this story by the executor of the Ray estate. So mainly the book begins with their lives in Hamburg to explain to young readers and to their families who the Rays were. And then the second part of the book is their escape from Paris and coming in to New York. But it doesn't detail their lives later too much. That information appears in a retrospective that I wrote for Houghton Mifflin that I think you are going to be sent a PDF of.
Yeah, I have a PDF of it, yes.
Yeah. So that talks about how they wrote the books that followed the original Curious George.
Okay, so at what point they left Paris with the manuscript of something which was eventually going to become Curious George? At what point did they start actually writing Curious George, Louise Borden?
Well, earlier. They first wrote a book called Raffi and the Nine Monkeys that was published in French and in English in 1939. And it's a children's book about a giraffe and nine monkeys. And the baby monkey's name in that book, that published book, is Fifi. And so then they started to work on a book taking just that little one monkey, Fifi, and having a book with Fifi's adventures. And Fifi was a boy's name, that they were using, but it sounded, by the time they got to America, the editor here said, let's change Fifi. That sounds a bit feminine, and it's, you know, it's a little boy monkey. You know?
Uh-huh.
And they settled on the name George.
It's a very generic name. Now,
yes,
I was
they were working on other books also. Lift the Flap books, a book called How Do You Get There? Anybody at Home? That's the title of the book, Anybody at Home. So they were just kind of beginning to create books for children when the war came, although they'd used their artistic and photographic skills in advertising, making posters for various companies and, you know, things like that.
Okay, what comes to mind is, okay, so they're born in Germany. They had Brazilian passports. They were in Paris. How did they come to write a book in English?
Yes, it's amazing. Hans spoke 5 or 6 languages. Now he's speaking Portuguese when he's in Brazil, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they wrote, well, Raffi and the Nine Monkeys was first written in French and English. There's a French version and an English version. And Fifi, they wrote in, I saw the drafts appear in The Journey That Saved Curious George, a page in English. But they weren't writing in German. They weren't living in Germany. And they were using the languages of the lands that they were living in.
Okay. Now, so if you're just joining us, our guest today is Louise Borden. She has written a book called The Journey That Saved Curious George, The True Wartime Escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray. And it's by Houghton Mifflin and it's available wherever you buy a book, you'll really be able to find this one. So there have been some children's books over time, which have become collector, like annotated edition, scholarly works. I mean, like Alice in Wonderland has this whole thing where you could buy there's like various and sundry people have lectured on the ins and outs of what was behind that, and Winnie the Pooh, and then The Little Prince. And there's all these people that the allegories and the backstories. Are we going to be getting that with Curious George? Can we say that George is representative and analogous of something? Or is Curious George just a children's story, Louise?
I think, in my own opinion, I think that Curious George is a book character that they created. And they weren't expecting to write a second one. But because it was popular and children asked them to write one, this is now when they're in America, they stepped into a second book, and then they did another, and then another, and then those are Margaret's words from a recording I heard, a radio interview in 1966, I think it was, when they came out with their final book, Curious George Goes to the Hospital. So, I know people have asked me and asked other, people, George doesn't have a tail in Raffi and the Nine Monkeys. The cover of that jacket, the monkeys are blue and the giraffe is, a giraffe color. And then later the monkeys are changed to a brown color, but they don't have tails. And I can't answer for Hans, but I think the estate, Lely Ong, the executor, said this is a book character that they created, that there's no, deep symbolic meaning in all of this. So
I'm sure if people could sit around and analyze Beatles lyrics, they could probably sit down and do something for Curious George.
I'm just interested in the Rays as people. Hans was kind of a Renaissance man. He was a deep thinker. He was so talented with his art. His art is so child-centered. Margaret had attended more formal art. She had more formal art training, but she was a photographer and she was kind of the businesswoman of the pair. She would serve as Honda's art director. Some people thought she had a bit of a feisty nature. And I think that they had this optimism and energy, and they loved their work. And, I was interested in them, as true artists, and I think they were. And the children's book field today, even, there's that sense. It's a small field. People meet each other at conferences. People love working in paint and with words that are going to go out into the lives of children. and go into their backpacks when they leave school, or they take a book out of the library. And editors and art directors, librarians and teachers, we kind of all swim in this sea of children's literature. And here is a book that was written by a man born in 1898, and it's still, that jacket, you know, is recognizable around the world. It's just incredible.
Oh, yeah. My wife, when I was coming, as I was walking out the door, she said, was it in Australia we went into the department store and they had this whole Curious George exhibit? And I said, yeah, I think you were right. Now, let me just ask you. So the Rays, what was their name before it was shortened to Ray?
Reiersbach,
yes,
was Hans's name. And okay. Margaret was Waldstein.
Okay. So so I can imagine he shortened it to sound more American or less German.
Well, he shortened it in Brazil because Reiersbach was difficult with the Portuguese in Rio and the language. And so he just shortened it to Ray. And Margaret's name has, four different spellings over her early lifetime in school documents. And then she shortened Marguerite to Margaret, M-A-R-G-R-E-T, before they came to the U.S.
Mm, okay.
But I was able, after the Journey That Saved Curious George was originally published in 2005, and after the book was published, I still had questions. I was still finding out information. A documentary aired last summer called Monkey Business that's also going to be shown at the Holocaust Memorial Center. And this is, you know, a nationwide documentary. And because of the documentary, relatives of the Rays who live in Australia and Brazil contacted the estate with childhood photos of Hans that had never been seen before.
Wow.
This was, you know, 2 years ago. And his house in Hamburg that I'd never seen, it's destroyed during the war, but here is an archival photograph, you know. So archival pieces are, as you know, so important.
Right.
I just wanted to share kind of a fun, it's not fun, but an interesting anecdote that your listeners might be interested in.
Sure.
Curious George was published in the U.S. in 1941, in August. And then a year later, in 1942, it was published by the Rays British publishers in London, Chatto and Windus. It was published as Zozo.
Uh-huh.
So it's got the classic jacket, and instead of saying Curious George, it says Zozo, because, you know, King George was the king. They couldn't have, you know, the king's name in the book about a monkey, et cetera. And Zozo had been a character in their first book, Raffi and the Nine Monkeys. So on the flap of this book, it states, a few thousand lucky young people in this country were the happy possessors of Raffi and the Nine Monkeys. Many more would have been equally lucky if a large number of copies of the English edition had not been in Paris at the outbreak of war and prevented by Hitler from reaching England. However, fortunately, Mr. Ray himself escaped, and so whether or not you had a Raffi, you can now have this exciting story of Zozo, who is one of the nine. He is perhaps the most daring and mischievous of them all. And when you have read of his escapades, you will see that it would take more than Hitler to catch and keep him.
Wow.
So I just think that's a very moving echo of the Rays' lives. George is always getting into trouble and getting out of trouble, and how lucky we are that the Rays were able to get out of Europe, come to America. I mean, imagine our world without Curious George.
I have one more question, and we have to wrap it up. So the Rays fled Paris from the Nazis. Were they, in your opinion, would you say they fled because they were Jewish, communists, anti-Nazis, some other anti-philosophical? What was their reason for feeling a need to escape the Nazis? French people just not getting involved with a war? There's lots of reasons why they could have escaped.
Right. Well, I think, in my opinion, I think they left. Number one, you know, everyone was leaving Paris to get out of the way of the army, but they were German-born Jews, and I'm sure they felt that risk in their lives, because had they stayed in France the next fall, foreign Jews had to register at police stations. And so whether they had a Brazilian passport or a Dutch passport or, you know, they were foreign Jews. When I found the ship manifest of the ship that they took from Rio to New York City in October of 1940, they were listed on the ship manifest, thank you, Ancestry.com, as Hans Reiersbach, called H.A. Ray, and Hebrew was written above. You know, it was German and it crossed out and it said Hebrew because, of course, he didn't have German citizenship. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that that was part of it. I don't think it was that they were, you know, communist or whatever you were saying in your list there of reasons. But most of their family left Europe before the Holocaust unfolded. But there was a relative of Hans's. I had thought it was a cousin, but I think I've learned more recently that I believe it was an aunt of Hans's, Paris de Theresienstadt.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so you've come up with different editions. I'm looking at a paperback edition with a bright yellow color, which kind of looks like a, as soon as I saw it, I didn't even have to look at it. I said, oh, that's got to do with Curious George. It's the same color scheme as a Curious George book. And there's a hardcover, and there's also additional editions, Louise Borden?
Yes, there's a young reader's edition. And Alan Drummond, whose art is on exhibit at the Holocaust Memorial Center, it's his art that's kind of the show-stopping part of the exhibit there. Mm-hmm. He lives in England, and he and I collaborated with an editor to... We changed the format a bit for the young reader's edition. It's a smaller trim size. The broken lines that I write in my style have been kind of made more into paragraphs to elevate it for more, you know, fifth and sixth grade readers. So it doesn't look like a picture book. It looks more like, you know, the trim size of a novel. And then at the very end, there's a section, a conversation with Louise Borden and Become a Detective, where I show four clues giving photographs to children and showing them how detectives can look at pictures and get ideas and clues and find facts that way through using the photos.
Okay.
Or the there's also a page of Hans's diary.
Okay, wonderful. So that's going to do it. Okay.
I wanted people to see what I had seen in the archives, and that's why those are included along with Alan's very wonderful illustrations and HAs. I think
it really does come through. It's a very special book. Okay, our guest has been Louise Borden, The Journey That Saved Curious George, the wartime escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray. Thank you very much in enlightening us. This has been wonderful.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. We have on the line Michael Druck, the poet laureate of the Jewish Hour. It's been a zillion years. Michael, how many years are do we have you on already?
It must be 25, I'm guessing.
I would reckon so. So, yeah. But you're not our secret, but we love having you on. Okay, so it's Tisha B'Av, and it's poetry time. Do you have a Tisha B'Av-esque poem?
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Go for it.
Pile the books on the table there. I'm his reader. Let me work. Give me pen and paper there. I'll find meaning where it lurks. Several ways to interpret things. Search for blessings in every word that sings. I am his reader. Let me work. A seeker, a reaper, tilling the crop. The mind grows until it's not what it once was. A pile of people politicize while I, the seeker, memorize what a sage said. The score of a game was razor thin. Nothing stops thoughts within. Who will lose? Who will win? It matters not to the seeker, the Torah scholar, the crop reaper, the universal keeper of great things. Pile books on a table inches high. God is watching by and by, the universal creator of greater things. I am his reader. Let me work.
Okay, we're gonna have to discuss this one a little bit. This is very ethereal. This one. So what you're saying is the Almighty has given us the various missions and challenges, and it's up for us to delve into the books at hand, our manual, which is the Torah, to find out what it is that we need to do. Is that kind of what you were saying?
Without distraction.
Perfect. Okay. I'm glad I got it. Okay. Have you got another one?
Certainly. I saw the people praying, head and arms against the wall. I saw the people praying as if God, holding God so he wouldn't fall. Some divine inspiration, perhaps. They kept the light on, ignoring distraction, while God was watching all the action. I saw people praying, writing notes to put in places, asking God for his embraces, filling holiness in spaces. That's what Jews do, you know. See them bow in prostration by the wall in a Jewish nation, with stones of strength and determination to keep his light on. I saw the people praying prayers and ancient sayings here and there with their bending from the Jews never ending to keep his light on. The candle sways and ignites a flame, the fate of man in day and night. As long as Jews have their prayers, always what it should be here and there. That's what Jews do, you know.
Wow. Have you ever been to Israel on Tisha B'Av? Have you been to the wall when
not on Tisha B'Av, I've been to Israel.
Okay.
I've been by the wall.
I've only seen like videos of it. They have like if you go on the live Jerusalem cam, or what they call it, the wall cam, you can see it's going on like a whole Tisha B'Av. They have people sitting there, the wall is packed, and people, it's really very intense that people are sitting there mourning the loss of the temple at the place where the temple was lost. And we want to keep the light shining. Yes, indeed. We want to thank you so much for coming on. And last time we spoke, so the collected works were in the production.
And, you're working on it,
and I'm chomping at bit, proverbial speaking.
Thank you very much. Be well. Have a good
okay. An easy Tisha B'Av.
Yes, you too. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herschel Fidman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. We've got a song coming up next The singer was requested by my daughter, Shira, who is visiting in town. Shira lives in New York City in Brooklyn and is a school teacher there and has the summer off. So she's spending time at what I would call at home. I don't know if she calls it at home, but she gets to eat mom's cooking. And the singer, so she said, play something by Yitzhak Dadya. And there is a piece called Im Eshkach Yerushalayim, which is very fitting for Tisha B'Av. It means it's taken from Psalm 100, and don't quote me, 137, I want to say, that says, if I forget you, Jerusalem, let my right hand wither.
Im Eshkach Yerushalayim. תשכח ימיני ירושלים תשכח ימיני אם לא אעלה את ירושלים על ראש שמחתי
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Mayor Schulfenman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. The portion of the week is the portion of Ve'eschanan, which is chapter 6, verse 2 of the book of Deuteronomy. On Tisha B'Av, at this time of the day, one is only allowed to learn those things relevant to Tisha B'Av. Moshe opens up with this soliloquy in this week's portion, saying how he begged 515 times, I want to go to Israel. And the Almighty gave him basically 516 reasons why not. The last one being, no, because I said so. Okay, without going into all the different the details of the conversation between the Almighty and Moses. The point, though, is reference to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is one of those days when we focus on a need. We have to recognize, I mean, ideally, we should recognize every day that we're in exile. The Jews are not where they belong. As good as things are, Baruch Hashem, thank God, there are no pogroms. Jews are found in places of prominence. The Jewish contributions to society are recognized. We're prospering, but we're still in exile. We say we're doing so good. I sent out before on Friday a little messages to people that they should have an easy Tisha B'Av. Good Shabbos, easy Tisha B'Av. What would be an easy Tisha B'Av? Mashiach comes, and then the temple gets rebuilt, and we have a big party, and we're all dancing. That would be the easiest way to do Tisha B'Av. It says we don't know what it is that we're missing, even. There's an expression in Yiddish, probably an old Yiddish expression, as I want to say, is because I don't know if anybody's making up new Yiddish expressions per se. And the expression is, so the worm was wund and achrein is a zissel leben. You have a horseradish root. And like everything else, horseradish roots are susceptible to invasion by pests. So here you have, if you've ever like actually bit into a horseradish root, it is really vile. It is like the word wretched. It's like, that's exactly what it does. Your stomach just says, get this out of me. And here there's a worm that lives in the horseradish root. And the expression is, to that worm, life is sweet. Could you imagine if you take that worm and put it in sugar? The thing would die of overpleasure. That's our lives. We're used to it. We see ourselves as prospering and successful and having good times, but we don't know how much better it is. We're living in chrein. We're living in horseradish when we really should be living in sugar. And one of the things, one of the last things that the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, blessed memory, 20-something years ago, was to go out and make people aware that, yes, we are not to be complacent. We need to demand of the Almighty that it's already time to send the Mashiach. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to rabbifinman.com. You'll You'll find a way to contact me. You'll find archived editions of the radio show, the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, classes, all right there, easily accessible, easily formatted. You'll also find the donations page. Tisha B'Av is in a very auspicious day to give charity. As it says, Tzedakah Tatzil M'Mavis, charity protects or saves from death. From horrible decrees, people are rendered victorious by giving extra charity. So go to the computer. Go to the donations page of RabbiFinman.com and give a donation. You'll be glad that you did. You're doing something good. You're doing making the darkness of Tisha B'Av that much less. Don't like doing internet giving? Understood. Drop an amount of any denomination of your desire in an envelope. You do it. If you put it in an envelope today, even though it doesn't get mailed till tomorrow, fine, still works. And mail that donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. And you'll be glad you did. What's going on, Jewish Ferndale, this week? Let's see. Thursday, for men only, we have Glatt Kosher Beef and Bourbon. It's $50. You have to RSVP on the website. These are really nice steaks. Lots of good craft bourbons and single malts. And we RSVP only. You have to go to the website, jewishferndale.com, and RSVP and pay up. There's also Tanya classes tomorrow night, 9 o'clock, which is live streamed on Facebook. Women's yoga. Oh, also tomorrow night is Open Art Studio from 6 until 10 at the Center for Jewish Creativity. And class of drawing is from 6 to 8, and watercolor is from 8 to 10, and there is a charge for that. And that's also at 1725 Pinecrest. Anything else going on of note? Oh, yes, Mommy and Me on Tuesdays. Tuesday morning, Mommy's with Kids 0 to 5. That's 10:30 till noon. There's a $3 charge for that. And it's a summertime theme. That's going to be led by Bracha Schwartz and Ruby Sparkle, and free massages to the mommies who come, courtesy of Mindy, massages by Mindy of Ferndale. And that's all at Jewish Ferndale this week. What's Tisha B'Av all about? Since we are in Tisha B'Av, the straw that broke the camel's back, you might say, is a famous story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. There was a man, very wealthy person, who lived in Jerusalem about 2,000 years ago, minus a couple of years, who had a friend by the name of Kamsa, and had somebody who he detested by the name of Bar Kamsa. He made a huge party, and he told his servant, go invite my good friend Kamsa. And the friend got confused and invited, understood, Bar Kamsa. Everybody's doing his thing. The host makes his grand entrance, and he sees Bar Kamsa sitting at his party. He flew into a rage and went over and started screaming at him, how dare you? He says, what? I thought that you were trying to make friends, to make up with us. And I was so happy that you invited me. At least stop yelling. I'll leave. But just, you know, said, get out immediately. He said, listen, don't make a scene. I'll pay for half your party. He said, I want you out. He said, I'll pay your whole party. He picked him up and threw him out. Bar Kamsa was so upset at this, as you could probably well imagine. And he said, there were rabbis there at this party, and no one objected. They all hate me. I'm going to get them. And he traveled to Rome. And he said, made an appointment to see the Caesar, and said, the Jews are rebelling. Caesar took a look at the daily sheet of what he had been advised by his advisors, and nothing there about Jews revolting. He said, listen, we'll make a test. You offer up a sheep, send it with me, and you'll see they won't accept it. It was fine. Good. On the way, Bar Kamsa split the lip of the sheep, which an animal offered on the altar has to be perfect without blemish. The Romans also had this, but they figured a split lip, no big deal. It'll heal. It's no big deal. On the Jewish altar, no split lip. Nothing has to be absolutely perfect. So Barkamsa came and he said, "The Caesar in Rome presents this sheep as a sacrifice on the altar. Now there's a whole big quandary. We can't offer this. What do we do?" There was a faction that said we should offer it anyway. Another faction said, "You can't do that. You're compromising your ideals. People will say that we don't have any faith in the Almighty. We can't do that." Someone else said, "We should kill Barkamsa is what we should do." He said, "You can't do that because then people will think if you bring in an animal that's got a blemish, you're deserving of the death penalty. We can't do that." So he says, "So what can we do?" He says, "We can only do what we can only do. We have to say we're not offering this sheep and suffering the consequences." Barkamsa went back to Rome with the sheep. By that time, the lip was healed. And he said, "You see anything wrong with this sheep?" "No, they wouldn't offer it, I told you." And with that, the invasion, well, they're already living there, but the conquest of Judea began. And several years later, the Second Temple was destroyed, and we were thrown into exile. So last night, we read from the Book of Lamentations, the Book of Acha, which is what we're closing with. We wish you, as I wished everybody this weekend, an easy Tisha B'Av, which means that Mashiach will come today, and the temple will be rebuilt, and we'll be having a big party, and we'll be dancing in Jerusalem. That's a real easy Tisha B'Av. But in the meantime, we hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we have a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Music next week. Yes. מעוני ומרוב עבודה היא ישבה וגויים לא מצאה מנוח כל רודפיה השיגו